It's Great Mondays Radio, a podcast exploring how work is changing in the age of AI. I'm Josh Levine, a transformation executive helping private businesses elevate how their teams operate in an AI-driven world. On the show, I speak with executives, people leaders, and other humans rethinking how decisions get made, how managers lead, and how teams are learning to adapt. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 30 minutes, and I'll tell you how. A lot of businesses are won and lost in operations, and how we get it done is really important. We don't talk about it enough on this program, and so today I want to talk about not just operations and how to get it done better, but how AI is changing what that might look like. Today with me on Great Mondays Radio, Paul Swaney. He is the managing partner of Swaney Group Capital, a former McKinsey ops consultant, also Amazon ops manager, so he knows his way around the ops world, and we're going to get into it. Paul Swaney, thanks for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Yeah, super good to meet you, Josh. Very happy to be here.
All right, so let's just quickly do a one ops 101. When we're thinking about, or when you're thinking about an organization that you may buy, you're evaluating, you have purchased, and are working through, what are you looking at, and where are the biggest problems that you typically see, and incorporate. You know, I know that culture is a major part of how you think about this. So make that link for us.
Yeah. So look, in a 2-hour factory tour, I can tell you 75% of where the culture is going to be. It's everything. The fingerprints of culture are everywhere. How clean is a factory? Are they wearing their personal protective equipment? What metrics are they looking at? And so I could do like a light sweep. And then, you know, rough cut, say, hey, there's probably a 10 or 12% cost opportunity here. Can this place handle more capacity or more demand? And then it's not dispositive as far as like getting it down to a decimal point, which most private equity professionals like to do.
That's right.
But you can directionally say, go, no go. Is there room to work here? Mm-hmm. Right. And so, but that's all based on culture. Because like culture is literally what you'll tolerate or what your standards are. Right. Yeah. And if you've got like missing updated metrics on the board, or you got a screwdriver or a broom laying next to the spot where the broom's supposed to be hung, that tells you way more than just that, because normally the banker sets up the tour. And if they didn't even clean their house up when guests come over, you know, it's actually a lot bigger problem.
Yeah. This is so interesting. I'm actually going to a factory tour for a client in a couple weeks. So I'm really interested. This is not something that I have really done before. So to hear that is really interesting. And what I'm reflecting on is you have where in, let's say, a corporate environment, in order to get a sense of what the culture is, you got to kind of talk to people and maybe kind of hang out a little bit. But with the factory environment, you literally see the physical symptoms expressed on the factory floor.
100%. It's like there's two kinds of your buddy's garage. There's the organized epoxy floor, and then there's he can't find his Allen wrenches, right? And that speaks a lot, because the guy that has the epoxy floor with all the tools in the right spot gets a project done faster. But if you can have the conversation, that helps even more. Because one of my key things is if I start talking to an operator and they're nervous to talk to me, that tells me the management team's protective of them and they're nervous about talking openly about how well their process is either working or not working.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is that an opportunity, or is that a like, I'm backing out, I'm backing away? I mean, I know you have a lot of inputs, and I'm making it stupid simple, but you know, from a culture perspective, are you going,
I've never killed a deal on a factory that needed to be improved.
Okay.
Unless it was like a brazen safety thing.
Okay.
That said, I like knowing I have gas in the tank.
Yep.
You know, most businesses that are bought by private equity are growing, right? And I mean, that's kind of strategy. They're growing. And growth is the most destructive thing to like orgs. You're like constantly like thawing and refreezing and thawing and refreezing. And it's very tough to scale and keep the culture, because you're adding bodies, you're adding systems.
Yeah.
You're always getting new IT systems. So I just, wherever they're at, I want to know like what the current state is, if I've got some gas in the tank.
Yep.
And, or, you know, and is it going to be a problem right now? Different with the management team and their culture, but as far as on the floor, it's just what it's at and what am I signing up for?
Yeah. Okay. That's fair. All right. So you've decades of experience, ops, evaluating, managing all that stuff. Let's get right into, I want to just fast forward because I am super interested in what is AI, what is happening with AI. And I think you said before we started recording, you said you were stalwart against it in 12 months ago, and now you're for it. Tell me your what changed for you.
So it's about leverage. You know, I was working in an elevator maintenance business, and I saw this system where the tech could take a picture of a 60-year-old like relay panel, let's call it that, and tell AI what the problem was. And it would tell them pretty close to what was wrong.
Yep.
And what they were doing before is sending a picture and a screenshot to their supervisor, who was like the super tech. And then he was having to either like talk them through what to do or actually drive to that location. So what it's really doing is like upskilling the junior talent and then creating more, you know, I'll call it like augmented capabilities into the business.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So one of the things also that I'm curious to see for you. So since you're adjacent to some of these manufacturing jobs, which are protected from AI, are you concerned that some of the more white collar parts of the organization, or do you see as an opportunity to cut headcount when bringing in AI? Is that how you're thinking about it?
Short answer, there's a lot of white collar jobs that are going to be displaced. So we know from history, technology's never caused a net job loss, but repetitive tasks are going to go away. I was looking at a pipe fitting business that had fabrication in it too. And, you know, the project manager and the designer, they would spend a lot of time taking plans and then writing the parts list down, which is called detailing or takeoff. And AI should be able to do that, right? Your job mm-hmm. has to be more thinking and decision-making. If your job is a task, you're ripe to be disrupted. If your job is making decisions and using judgment that AI is not ready to do yet, it's safe. One of the things I heard, I actually don't know if the status is true, but your brain does like 100,000 trillion calculations per second or something obnoxious.
Yeah.
I want the designer of the pipe fitting company to do 30 projects and not have to do the crappy work of like writing a parts list. I want him to go to the site and see conditions and make judgments of what's my productivity factor.
Yeah.
And AI can't go to the site, and then he can get his estimate closer because all the dumb work, quote unquote, has been systematized by a computer, which is frankly not that useful because you're counting valves. I don't know. Is that making sense?
Yeah, it is. And I was listening to, do you know Michael Pollan, the author? Yeah.
Yep.
So he's recently come out with a book about consciousness, and he's thinking about it. And one of the things that I noticed he said was that where it's not, everything's not automated, the social aspects of what our brain does, there's a lot that our brain does that is automated. And there's always, okay, I'll just take a little side route here. Wherever we are in technology, that's how we compare brains to. So it was like, it was a radio, it was a, you know, a calculator. So here we are again. But I think the analog is true, which is he's saying the social tasks, the social interactions require decisions. And decisions, you just brought up, are where the real human value comes in. And you can say, well, Paul, you could give the AI all the information and it can make a decision for you. But I don't know about you. I do not do, even no matter how much information I give, it does not feel like it's even anywhere close to the amount of information it needs to make a really good decision.
So it's interesting. So the problem is like in a normal distribution, that's fine. But what if you're assessing a company that just had a fatality, right? Mm. And is the safety culture bad? Can you look at that in the data? Maybe they only had like no injury. And then they got this like not black swan, but this like long tail risk event.
Yeah.
Like you can't code a model for that yet.
Yeah.
So how do you make the decision whether to invest or whether to decline, right? Because it's an infrequent occurrence, high severity problem. And that takes human judgment to either and say, hey, I'm going to accept this or not. Like by definition, risks are not mitigatable. So like you have to decide, is this a deal breaker? Does I take the price down?
Yeah.
Do I own it? Do I bring in the top safety guy I've ever met in the world? I would not outsource that decision to any of the top tier AIs right now.
Yeah. Okay. So then let's bring this back to culture. So you think a lot about culture when you're thinking about these businesses. Do you have a sense yet of what a culture, what kind of attributes a culture needs to, or you need to sort of build into a culture in order to best leverage or do these lever, let's say best use AI? Do you have a sense yet? Again, early days, right? Everybody's just like, all the tech and just please use it, right? I know. I'm pushing you to look out a little further than maybe even you're comfortable with. What are you seeing here as far as like how to organize, incentivize, help people really understand what's happening in order to get AI to do what it's best for?
So it's interesting. I haven't thought about it, but I'll think about it now. So it's easier to convert someone that's already using a product to your product than to convert a non-user to be a user, just like generally. That said, the most opportunity is for the non-users, right? So as I think about this, the easiest way to put it in would be in like a tech-centric company that's tech-enabled. But you know, in an acquisition we recently did, you know, they're taking paper checks still. And AI can swoop that up very, very quickly. And, you know, when you're on the board and you're managing a company, I mean, technically you could mandate something or ratify the strategy. You don't always want to pull that lever.
No, that's right.
You just don't, right? It's
going to backfire.
It's not helpful, right?
You're
going to end up being in the chair and you don't want to do that because you can't buy anything else. You know, the other thing too is I like doing risk-free pilots where it's like, hey, try this. If it doesn't work, I'm not going to hit you on your comp at the end of the year.
Yeah.
If it does, we'll just call it good. I'm not going to say I told you so.
Yeah.
So you just got to create the right incentive structures to get like an option in the business. So I just put Ramp into one of the companies, which is AI expense reporting.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to roll out the accounts payable. And it is an order of magnitude more intuitive than any other system. And they were using manual expense processes and like Excel forms and hand sending receipts corporate. And the CFO, I think, was like, yeah, we'll try this. I won't say he's unsupportive, but watching his energy level escalate when he saw what this could do and how much better it would make his life. You know, you just kind of like got a nudge to water a little bit, I think.
Mm.
And again, I go back to the, you know, whether it's a one-step sale or a two-step sale, I think just create a pilot, which I like call like a mini transformation, and create a safe space for that to exist so nobody's getting pointed at, and then get like a couple of like quick hits so you can prove some level of concept. And I think they get on board and start wanting to pull things to you.
Do you ask them, and these are live questions that I'm, do you ask them, the employees, to come up with a way to use it? Or are you saying, you guiding them? Are you giving them a task? Like, where would, because I feel like your point about a non-user to a user, I don't have that box in my head. And of course, you and I are talking like, well, you know, it's like repeatable tasks. Are you saying look for a repeatable task? Or are you saying, you know, what are you doing in your workflow, or just try it in your workflow? How much autonomy, how much guidance do you think would be the kind of right level of effort?
Now it's kind of top down push.
Yeah.
Because everybody's afraid of it. Everybody's like, the robots are going to take my jobs.
I don't want to AI myself out of a job.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, you kind of have to be like a growth company. it doesn't become a question because there's always going to be more boxes and names in the boxes, right? And so, like, you're kind of gonna have to push it top down. But I mean, you spent some time with Toyota, you know, they get like 100,000 employee suggestions per year.
Yeah.
My hypothesis is, and hopefully I'm right, is that this will be like, you know, kind of self-igniting, and then you'll get suggestions. But as a board or as leadership, instead of using a normal tool, you may be able to pull the AI tool out of the toolbox and try to fix it systematically instead of like with a paper-based countermeasure.
Are there any, so you wrote a book called Cultural Kaizen, and you've got a number of principles in there. If you wouldn't mind just quickly going over those, and then are there, as you are thinking through this, are there any that are becoming more important as we start to move into what I believe is a very different new working system?
So it's sort of like a paradox, like get on the floor more, right? It's I think you're gonna find these people, and I didn't invent this, obviously. I think you're gonna find people think they can, because of AI, they can manage from their desk. And one of the directors at a company I used to work with at my old shop, he had on all of his managers' desk a placard that said, "A desk is a terrible place from which to view the world." And I think it's going to be twice as important to get out there and actually see what's going on. Because as we all know, like GPT hallucinates, right? And you can be
And you
well
can too if you're sitting
I
there at the
yeah.
desks,
And
exactly.
but it'd be worse. It's hallucinating, right? It's like if you ask somebody to get your report, I mean, you're at least 95% sure they're not lying to you, but you're not sure that GPT it's not hallucinating. So it's gonna be critically important that you spend actually more time with your people.
What does that mean for tech firms, SaaS firms, right? We're not talking about, let's see, so does that mean more in-person work? Does that mean a distrib like what does that mean for a distributed organization? How do I get on the floor more in an organization that isn't making a physical thing?
So I don't have a good answer to this, but I will say I loathe work from home. I don't know if you saw Scott Galloway on Bill Maher a few like a month ago. He's like the one of the worst things to happen was like remote work. There is nothing better, especially now, than four smart, competent humans around a whiteboard. And particularly as you deploy these toys, I just think these decisions are going to take more care because they're more impactful. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it's like the irony of it.
That is really amazing, because we're going to get caught up in the logic of or the entropy of, I'll just sit here further back at my desk, right? And it's like you're just going to be passive, and it's very easy to be lulled, because those AI models know how to stroke your ego and know how to say, "Great question, Paul."
100%. I know a firm that built this software that was and basically sent the message out that you'll be able to run companies from the fucking beach. And no, you have to go show up. Like we just bought, I can't disclose yet because of we're cleaning up some cybersecurity issues. But I've done 39 flights in 2026. I did like 75 last year. And I went to every single one of the sites, save two out of 16, and did five ride-alongs with sales team members, a supplier. And that is even more important now because we're making decisions. Ramp was easy. It's very test and true, still AI. But we may do some AI design work. We might do AI production scheduling. And if you mess up the apple cart there one time, they'll never take it in the org again. It's just going to be absolutely critical to be more connected to people, which it doesn't, it's not intuitive, but it actually is.
I think this is the major takeaway. This is the takeaway from our conversation. It is what you're going to do with AI. AI is so powerful that if you just push it in a particular direction, it's going to keep rolling and have this massive impact. And so it's the go slow to go fast. AI is great for scaling, great for repetitive tasks. but it is not going to replace the front part of this process. And the real human element is actually going to see how people are working and interacting with each other, even if it's not the factory floor, quote unquote. It's actually getting work done together in person. And that I love that. I knew you were no, shrinking violet, but I love that kind of F you in your face. Like, it's the opposite of what you're doing right now, buddy. You got to actually step up and take more flights. You got to show up more in order to take advantage and use AI in a way that's going to make us, our team and our business more successful. That is such an insight. I really appreciate that.
It's to build on that. It's, your decisions will compound on themselves.
Yes.
And the feedback loop will actually be longer to get like garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah. Garbage. And, yep.
Because if you don't set the model up right up front, mm-hmm. you're done.
Yep.
And so it's like, it's the irony is it like, it's not going to kill travel if you do it right. But you're going to get this like K shaped of people that try AI and they lose 20% of revenue. And then you got to have this other side that they're going to gain 20% of revenue. And like the profit pools are going to be up for grabs.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, I think, we're in this moment, so obviously everybody's making predictions about all sorts of how AI effects work. And no one really knows. And I think, these kinds of conversations, this is why I'm having these kinds of conversations, which I appreciate so deeply. And we need to understand that everything is changing and take the opportunity. It's not that it's changing in a particular direction and, oh, well, we'll just let it happen. This is actually the opportunity to make work how we want it to be, form it. Like, we're going to have more opportunities, more variability and flexibility in this unfreezing moment. Everybody's being forced to change. So, at least let's acknowledge that and move in the right direction. What kind of business do you want to run? What do you want to have, a small business where it's just one person doing a thing? Do you want to have a big, it's like everything's up for grabs. It is up to the imagination to actually invent what the next kind of team and how it works will look.
So it's actually going to take a barrier away from scale, right? So you can run a pretty successful business now at 10 people, where you would have needed 100
yep.
to eat the cost of the indirects.
Yep.
Right. Do you know what I mean? So like, yep. I think I'm making this up, you got like a social media marketing, whatever, to like really go out and successfully serve clients before you need enough client facing people, enough like doers, and then like one finance person in the back office. Like, but now you'll be able to just do that with a smaller footprint and have the same amount of impact. Again, yeah. We're just going to do more work.
We're going to do more work. People aren't, we're not going to lose jobs. We're just going to be able to get more done.
Yep.
There was that famous prediction in the patent office in the 1800s. Everything's been, everything's been invented that could be the famous prediction that we're all going to, incredible men and women of leisure. Right. But nope, I'm here on a Friday working the hell, it's like, and that's what's going to happen. You're right. It is. I remember Guy Kawasaki in the early days talking about, let me show you how easy it is to start a business. Right. So it was like 20 years ago. And he was like, go to 99 Designs, get yourself a logo. You buy yourself a website, da, 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 da. Boom. You got it. Right. And so you're actually, this is in a long lineage of do more with less. You can do it. There's removing the barriers to scale and removing that friction. And so be careful where you point yourself, because that AI is going to rip you, right forward.
But it's interesting because that would have cost $5K, make a number up, $5K.
Yep.
When good. He said that, you could do that for $100 now.
That's right.
Right. I mean? Like, it's so it's like wild.
It is wild. It is wild. All right. One last question before we wrap up. When you think about the future manager, what's one piece of advice that you would give to them?
This interesting question. It's, you have to triple down on people skills and relationships in your early career. So I've had a debate on Twitter for years with the P guys about getting a chartered financial analyst certification, which takes a lot. It's like three exams. They're like 6 months or a year apart. Lots of studying. And my thing is like, you should just go to conferences and meet people. And
take that
people
take that time and put it into that.
Yeah. People hang their hat though on, like, I can be a technical expert by myself, study hard. And I was in the school system for years, probably a 1500 SAT kid. And if I just keep doing that, I'll be successful. That worked like in 2015. It's going, relationships are not replaceable by AI. They're just not. Deals don't get done with two computers talking to each other. It's not going to happen. But what I do think is going to be interesting is that you're going to have that base level of technical knowledge to be much better initially and then pivot over to the relationships faster, right? Because usually you would take, you know, 4 to 7 years on the technical side in finance. And now that time probably compresses to 2 years with AI. And then, but you better have some relationships if you want to, you know, keep going up the curve. Yeah. Right. And I think that's getting lost, that we're still humans. We still like people. Yeah. It's why when the internet came, like, you can't just click buy it now in a car or a house, because you want a human to walk you through that process.
The risk is too high.
It's too high emotionally. Even if it's not that high, you could get an inspector, click the button, buy the inspector. You could get the mortgage, click it on whatever bank rate. Get Zillow, click it. No one would buy a house without a realtor, because you want a human side by side with you.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Paul Swaney, managing partner of Swaney Group Capital. You can learn more about his work at swaneygroup.com. Hey, Paul, thanks for battling it out with me on this. I'm really, I really appreciate your perspective and your candor. Here's what I know. Here's what I don't know. But I think all of it was super valuable. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, Josh, super good. Hope we can do it again sometime. And if you're ever in St. Pete, I know you're a Florida guy. Love to buy dinner.
All right, perfect. I'll come over.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest on our program, head over to radio.greatmondays.com and fill in the application. Have a friend you think would find this episode interesting? Send it to them. And while you're at it, rate and review. It really helps. I'd love to connect. Send me an email, josh@greatmondays.com. And if you're interested in learning more about how I help private businesses elevate how teams operate in an AI-driven world, check out greatmondays.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.